We're on Daf Lamed Dalet Amud Beis, and we are entering into a major sugya, which is called Bein Hashmashos. So first let's see if we can all find the place, and then I'll give a little bit of an introduction. We're up to V'azdu L'tamayhu. So you'll count from the bottom of Daf Lamed Dalet Amud Beis, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 lines up from the bottom. And basically, the Gemara has a machlokes as to when Bein Hashmashos begins between Rabbah and Rav Yosef. According to Rabbah, Bein Hashmashos begins with Shkia, with sunset. Whereas according to Rav Yosef, it's a little bit later on, and it's what's called, just let me give you the language, it's called Hichsif Hatachton. What does it mean, Hichsif Hatachton? It means that when you look towards the west, where the sun sets, you will see that it's already getting dark. So the period of Bein Hashmashos, according to Rav Yosef, begins with what's called Hichsif Hatachton, and that means the lower skies towards the horizon are already getting dark. And Bein Hashmashos will start at that point, which is a little bit later than Shkia, and it will end at Hichsif HaElyon, which means that already the upper skies are dark. So the Gemara says, V'azdu L'tamayu, and this machlokes between Rabbah and Rav Yosef appears elsewhere. The Itmar, Shiur Bein Hashmashos Bekama, how long is the period of Bein Hashmashos? Now, what we're hoping to find out is that Rabbah will have a longer period of Bein Hashmashos than Rav Yosef. And the reason for that is because Rabbah begins Bein Hashmashos earlier, and Rav Yosef begins it slightly later. So how long of a difference is there between them? So it says, Omar Rabbah, Omar Rabbi Yudah Omar Shmuel, according to that school of thought, that's Rabbah's school of thought, Shlosha Chelke Mil. Bein Hashmashos is as long as Shlosha Chelke Mil. Now, we have to answer a couple of questions here. How long is a meal? So in order to answer that question, we have to know that a meal is equivalent to 2,000 amma. And this is a Gemara in Psachim that establishes that an average person could walk 40 mil in a day, which means that it would take 18 minutes to walk a mil. 9 minutes to walk half a meal. We'll see if we can keep this in mind as we go through. Not everybody agrees with what I just told you, and there's a long discussion about this in the Mishnah Berurah at the end of Orach Chaim. But in any event, let's see what we can figure out over here. So we have now something called Shlosha Chelke Mil. Okay. Fine. So let's assume that a meal is 18 minutes. Okay then? So we're going to try to work out this math. If let's say a meal is 18 minutes, then then two-thirds, let's see, according to, according to Rabbah. Ah, so Rabbah is going to have three-quarters of a meal. Let's just see. I'm just taking out a pencil here. Three-quarters of a meal. And we said that a meal equals 18 minutes, correct? So let's see if we can work this out. Three-quarters of... we're going to need fractions over here. So let's leave it for the time being. We'll get back to the minutes a little bit later on, but right now we'll have it as three-quarters of a meal. Now Rav Yosef, so that's Rabbah, and Rav Yosef is going to have two-thirds of a meal. Now let's just see, let's multiply to get 12. So let's say 4 times 3 is 12, and 4 times 2 is 8, is 8 twelfths. That's Rav Yosef. 8 twelfths of a meal, correct? That's the same as 2/3. And Rabbah has 3/4 of a meal, so then we multiply 4 times 3 is 9 twelfths of a meal. I mean, the reason I'm making it into twelfths is so that we can compare and contrast Rabbah, who has 3/4, with Rav Yosef, who has 2/3. Very difficult to compare those two fractions. But if you convert them into twelfths, so what you end up with is 9/12 versus 8/12. So the difference is going to be 1/12 of a meal, which I think is about 1.5 minutes. Okay, we'll see. We'll get to that. Let's go slowly. Okay. So the Gemara first starts with Rabbah. Rabbah says that that Bein HaShemashos is 3/4 of a meal or 9/12 of a meal. My Shlosha Chelke meal. Initially, the Gemara doesn't understand exactly what it means, Shlosha Chelke meal. I mean, Shlosha Chelke means 3 over something, but 3 over what? You know, you haven't told me 3 over what. Elema, if you're going to tell me, Tlosa Palge Mila, right? If it means 3 halves of a meal, is name a meal umechza. So that would be a meal and a half. Ela Tulsa Tilse Mila. If it's 3/3 of a meal, name a meal. That would be a meal. Ela, but rather it means Tlosa Rive Mila. It means 3/4 of a meal. Now, the Gemara doesn't consider other possibilities. For example, it could be 3/5 of a meal, or 3/6 of a meal, which is, again, a smaller fraction. So I have a note here in the name of the Ritva, that the Ritva says that Rava didn't actually specify exactly what the fraction is. So therefore, what do we assume in such a case? That he would be referring to the greatest possible period of uncertainty that you could fit into 3 parts. So the Gemara therefore begins with the greatest possible fraction, which would be 3/2. But that, again, that's the same as 1.5. And then it goes down to 3/4. Now, how long does it take to walk 3/4 of a meal? So he has here 13.5 minutes. 13.5 minutes. So again, if anybody has a calculator, if you could multiply 3/4 by 18, I'm hoping, please tell me that this works out, then you end up with 13.5. If that works out, then I'm a happy camper.
Right, you get get 54 over 4, which is 13 and a half.
Ah, excellent. Okay. So if you can make a note that according to Rabbah, Bein HaShmoshos is 13 and a half minutes. Okay? 13 and a half minutes. Okay, now we get to Rav Yosef. He has a different tradition of Rav Yehuda Meshmuel, and he says it's Shnei Chelke Meal. Okay, Shnei Chelke Meal, as opposed to three chelke meal. So again, the Gemara is going to go through this ambiguity. My shnei chelke meal, ilema shnei palge mila. If it means two halves of a meal, is lema meal. Then he should have said it's a meal. Ella trei revie meal, that's a half, is lema chatzi meal. Ella, but rather, what he had in mind, and here we turn to daf, lamed hamed aleph, is trei tilte meal. Is two-thirds of a meal. My Beinayu. So what's the nafkamina between Rabbah and Rav Yosef? And the answer is Ika Beinayu Palga Didanka. Okay, what's Palga Didamka? Didanka. So Danka is a sixth. And half of a sixth is a twelfth. So the nafkamina between the two is going to be 1/12. So what separates Rabbah's position of 3/4 of a meal from Rav Yosef, which is 2/3 of a meal, is 1/12 of a meal, which is the equivalent of approximately 1.5 minutes. So if I understand correctly, it means that according to Rav Yosef, we're talking about 12 minutes. Now let's see if that works out. Eight twelfths times 18. Steve, can you work that out for me? Eight twelfths times 18?
Right, it comes out to 96 over 8 or 12 minutes.
12 minutes. Okay, so let's just summarize. The way we're working it out is the following, and you can say it in one of two ways. Rabbah holds 3/4 of a meal, Rav Yosef holds 2/3 of a meal, or the way we're possibly saying it, if a meal is 18 minutes, then Rabbah has 13 and a half minutes, and Rav Yosef has 12 minutes. Again, this is all based on the fact, again, the whole discrepancy here is 1.2 minutes. Am I correct? And that 1.2 minutes is the difference between what we call Shkia Sachama, when the top of the sun dips below the horizon, and Hichsif HaElyon, when the horizon becomes dark, which is a little bit after Shkia. It's very quickly after Shkia. Okay. So Rabbah has a longer period of Shkia than Rav Yosef. And now the Gemara is going to point out that in a different context, it comes out Fakert. Okay, now this discussion that we're about to have has to do with Mukta. Now, what is relevant here to Mukta? So what turns out is that if you have a very, very large utensil, let's say for example a utensil that that contains water, for argument's sake, and if it's very, very large, then it's not makabel tuma. Why? Because it loses its shem kli. A shem kli is a function of, if I could use, I don't know the right word in English, movability, mobility. In other words, if you can move it, it's a kli. When something becomes so large and so heavy that you can't move it, then it loses its status as a kli, and hence it's not makabel tumah. So what we're going to analyze now is what is that heavy, that very large size, volume, which is so great that it loses its shame kli. The Omar Rabbah, Rabba says, Chalsa, Chalsa is the Kli. He translates it as a basket. Okay, fine. Bas Tre Kure, if it is large, that it only holds two kar. That's how much of a volume it has. We'll talk about a kar in a second. Is then Shari Little Tule. You're allowed to move it on Shabbos, which means that it still retains its status as a Kli. Okay? It still retains its status as a Kli. And therefore it's not Mukta. So there are two concepts that are mutually exclusive. One is Mukta and one is a Kli. If it's Mukta, it's not a Kli. And if it's not a Kli, it's Mukta. So Rab is insisting that even though the Kli can hold as much as two kar, it still retains its status as what? As a Kli. At what point do we say it's already too large? In other words, the volume is massive, and it's therefore it's not a Kli, and therefore it's going to be Mukta. Bas Tlosa Kuri, if it holds three kor, then it's no longer a Kli, which again is a Kula in Tumah V'Tara, but it's a Chumra in Mukta. Why? Because once it loses its status as a Kli, then it is Mukta. So again, we want to get back to figure out what a Kar is, just a second. Rav Yosef Amar, Bar Tlosa Kore, Nami Shori, Bas Arba Kore, Asur. So in other words, Rav Yosef is going to allow you a larger shear to still, even though it's a greater volume, and it still retains its shame Kli, and that's Tlosa Kure, but once it gets to the size of 4 Kure, then it's so large that it is no longer movable, and therefore it's not a Kli, and therefore it's Mukta. So the Gemara is just pointing out that we have now another machlokes between Rabba and Rav Yosef, but in this case, Rabba has an expanded shear, and Rabba has a more restricted shear, which is exact opposite of the machlokes with regard to Bein HaShmoshos. I don't believe that there's any conceptual, what word am I looking for, interdependence here. I mean, these are two independent machlokesin. One is about the size of a shear of a Kli, and the other is about Bein HaShmoshos. But the Gemara, sometimes the Gemara does this because it wants us to remember these two halachas, you know, and who holds what. Now, as far as the size of a kor is concerned, so I think Rav Kanevsky has written an entire sefer on this, on all the different shiurim, and he bases himself on his uncle, the Chazon Ish, and he says that we're talking about a kor as being somewhere between 248 liters and 432 liters. I guess depending upon various shitos. I mean, it's very similar. Now, this is all based on what's called seah. A kor is about 30 seah, which reminds me that the minimum size of a mikvah is 40 seah. So it's a kor is 3/4 of a mikvah. A mikvah is a very a very substantial volume, and you're talking about 248 liters. You know, that's one kor. Now, we're going to multiply that, according to Rabba, by two, and it's only when we multiply it by three. Again, I don't know why he mentions three. I'm sorry, why he mentions two. I guess two here means less than three. If it hits three, you know, that's about, you know, let's say, 750 liters. At that point, according to Rabbah, it loses its status as a kli. According to Rav Yosef, on the other hand, we have to wait till it reaches 1,000 liter until it loses its shame kli. Okay. Omar Abaye. Abaye says, Boy minei demar b'shas maisa. I asked my Rebbe Rabbah a question that came up halach l'maisa with a regard to a certain kind of a kli. Vafilu bas trei kuri lo shurali. Even if it was less than three kor, and even if it was two kor, he did not allow me to move it. In other words, even though theoretically Rabbah had a certain shear, but he was much more machmir l'maisa. And the question is, what led Rabbah to be machmir even in a case of a kli that had two kor? And he said, if it holds two kor, then it's not a kli. Kehai tana, keman kai tana, and it's based on the tana in a mishnah. Okay then. Now this mishnah is a mishnah in Kalim. This is another example of the overlap between Masech the Shabbos and Taros, and specifically Kalim, as far as Mukts is concerned. Okay. So what does the Mishnah tell us in Kalim? Kaveres Hakash, v'kaveres Hakonim, ubar Svina Alexandris. So we have various kinds of very large containers. One is made of straw, the other is made of reeds, and the third is a cistern. So what happens is, when you go on a ship, they need to keep water for those people who are on the ship, clean drinking water. So they had a bar. Bar is, in English, fancy English, is called a cistern, and that's where they kept water. So the Mishnah says, Afal pi sheyesh lahem shulayim ve'en machzikos arboim sa belach shehem kurayim biyavesh tahorim. So it has shulayim, which are called flat bottoms, so they are real full-fledged containers, right? Because nothing is seeping out. And therefore you would say that it's makabel tumah. But hein machzikos arboim sa belach shehem kurayim biyavesh. So he now sets up a ratio between lach and yavesh, in which he has 40 sa in lach, which is the equivalent of 2 kar in dry substances. So liquid is 40 sa. In dry substance, it's the equivalent of 2 kar. And we said that a kar was 30 sa, but that's in solid measurement. So that 2 kar in solid measurement would be 60 sa. And tahorim. Just 1 second. Tahorim. And now, what are we saying? That it's not a kli. Ah, and how much does it hold, this container? And it's already ice kli, it loses shame kli. Kurayim biyavish. 2 kar. Now, Rabbah had originally stated as an abstract halacha that a basket that has 2 kar is a kli, and it's mutter b'tiltul. It's only when it gets to three car. Here the Mishnah says two car is sufficient. And when I say sufficient, I mean sufficient to be such a large volume of solid stuff that it could already. It could already contain 60 saw, which is the same as two kor. It already loses its status as a kli. And that's why, as Abai recorded before, Rabba Lamaisa was not makil to allow me to be metaltel this large kli, because it could hold tre kure. It could hold two, otherwise known as kurayan. So he was machmir for this Mishnah. Or Rabbi Shmamina, Hai Gudsha Tilsahavi. Oh, now when you have a utensil, in the case of solids, this is not true for liquids, obviously, you can pile up solids way beyond the top of the kli. Do you follow? And that's called gudsha. Gudsha in modern Hebrew would be godesh. Godesh means it overflows. Forget if it's a liquid, it can't overflow. It won't stay in the kli. But in the case of a solid, you can go much, much further. And Abai wants to know how far up above the rim, the top part of the kli, can it go? And he says it could go up to a third. So that means the volume of the kli and the heap above the top of the kli is a ratio of three to one, meaning the heap above is one third of the volume of the kli. Now, why is this important? And secondly, how could Abai make this this absolute statement that the volume, you know, with the heap is one plus a third? I mean, that all is relative. I mean, it really depends upon, you know, what kind of utensil you're talking about, the configuration of the utensil. So the Rashi says that Abai was describing the utensils that were common in his day. They were bowl-shaped vessels, and the width was twice their height. Now, the whole nafka mina here, and this is Tosus in the name of Rabbeinu Tam, is for mekach u'memkar. So let's say, for example, we sign a contract for what's called a sa'a gidusha of grains, a heaped sa'a. So what's a heaped sa'a? So the answer is a heaped sa'a is 1.5 sa'a. How do you come up with 1.5? Because 1.5 means that the total amount is now one third more than the sa'a itself. Correct? So if you break down the sa'a into two thirds, adding a third third, then you end up with 1.5 saw. And that's how much the seller would have to deliver to the buyer in a case of a transaction on a saw gedusha. All right. Now, there was a brisa that the Gemara quoted on Daf Lamed Daled about Admumius, which means that after the sun sets, there is still a redness that is apparent on the horizon. And the question is, where would you look to find that redness? Would you look to the right, meaning towards the west, or would you look to your left towards the east? Abai was very surprised and he saw that Rava was looking at the west to see if there's redness in the sky in the west. Amale, so Abai said, wait a minute, Rava, you're mistaken. The Brisa says, Kol Zman Shepnei Mizrach Ma'adimim, which means that the period of time of Ben Ashmashos depends upon the reddening of the sky towards the east. Towards the east. In other words, when we want to judge as to whether the sun is just dips just below the horizon, or it's deep below the horizon, it's already night, then we're going to see the impact of the reflected light on the eastern horizon. So you should be looking to the east. Amale. So Rava replies to Abaye, Mi Savris Pnei Mizrach Mamish, when the Brisa says that you look towards the eastern horizon, don't take that literally, but rather Ponim Hama'adimim Esa Mizrach. What it means is that the light on the western horizon is going to impact all the way on the east. Not sure if I understood what you said, if you could say it one more time. Do you follow what's going on here? In other words, we're talking about the rays of the sun and the impact that it has even after Shkia. Those are the residual rays of the sun. And the question is, says Rava, are those residual rays strong enough such that there's still redness, a glow, even in the east? However, Rava says that if you want to know how, you know, whether or not there's enough light or redness in the east, then you really have to check out the west to see how profound, if you will, is the residual redness, the light in the west. So therefore, although when it says in the Brisa Kol Zman Shepnei Mizrach Ma'adimim, what it really means is that there's such an intense glow on the western horizon that it would redden even to some extent the eastern as well. But let's look towards the west, because the real phenomenon, the real way of gauging the intensity of the light is by looking at the west. It's only the east is going to be the, you know, the passive recipient of the profound redness in the western side. Ika Diamri, another version of this dialogue between Rava and Abai, but it's exactly the same, is Rava Chazi L'Abai Deka Davi L'Mizrach. Rava saw Abaye that he was looking towards the east. Amar Le Misavris Pnei Mizrach Mamish. That's not what the Brice has in mind. It doesn't mean that what makes it light or day is because there's redness in the east, but rather ponim amadimim esam, is because there's enough light coming up from the west as the sun sets that it could even have an impact and redden the east. V'simonech kavasa. Kavasa means a window. And I'm giving you an example of a window. And if you want to know whether or not there's light that is illuminating, you know, let's say, for example, you have a window and there's light coming through the window and you could see that light on the wall. But you don't look on the wall. The wall is just a pol yotze. You look at the window itself, and that's where you'll see the intensity of the light. Now the Gemara has an agadita. Just one second. No, we're not yet ready for the agadita. We have a few more lines. We have now a discussion of Rab Nechemia. Rab Nechemia is one of the Tanoim, and he also has his opinion about Bein Hashmashos. Rab Nechemia Omer, Kidei She'alich Odom Mishetishka Chama Chatzimil. In other words, how long is Bein HaShemashos? It's only from sunset for a half a meal. Now, if we said a meal was 18 minutes, then we're talking about 9 minutes. And after that 9-minute period, post-Shkia, it is Laila. Amar Rab Chanina, Rabbi Chanina says, Arotza Leida Shi'uro Shal Rabbi Nechemya. Okay, here, this is the introduction to the Agadita. If you want to know how long it takes from Bein HaShemash from Shkia till Laila, according to Rabbi Nechemya, which we said would be 9 minutes, is Yaniach Chama Berosh HaKarmel. Right, now we're talking about the Kohanim, and the Kohanim have to go to Mikvah if they were Tmeim, and that Mikvah has to take place during the day, and then they can eat Truma after Harif Shemesh at night. So he says, Yaniach Chama Berosh HaKarmel. So the mountain of Carmel, which overlooks the Sea of Tiberia, is there's still sun that is on the Rosh HaKarmel, on the top of the Mount Carmel. So he sees the sun, so he knows it's still day. V'yered v'yitbol bayom, he's able to get down from the mountain, and he could be tovel in the sea. V'yale, and when he goes back up to his original point of departure on the top of the mountain, then he knows it's nightfall. Zeu shi'uro shel Rabbi Nechemya. Okay, so I'll just read to you quickly this note. He says, if one is standing on the top of a mountain, the sun is visible to him as it is setting. A Kohen is contracted Tumah. He's standing on the top of Mount Carmel, and he can descend the mountain, immerse himself in the sea, and by the time he gets down to the mountain, it's still before Shkia. And then, by the time he gets back up to the place that he left, he's already allowed to eat Truma. Why? Because that's already Laila. That's already the next day, and therefore, so basically from the time that he goes down until the time he comes up, that's called Bein HaShemashos, and by the time he gets up, then it'll already be Laila, the end of Bein HaShemashos, and he can eat Truma. And the Mepharshim say we're talking about someone who descends quickly. Okay, now we get to a little bit of an Agadita. And that, excuse me. Amar Rabbi Chiya, Harotze Liros Be'era Shel Miriam. Right, Be'era Shel Miriam is one of the things that still exists. So where do you find it? He says, Yale L'Rosh HaKarmel. He climbs the mountain of the Carmel, the Yitzpeh, he looks out at the sea, and from the vantage point of the top of Hamar Carmel, he will see Kimin Kvora is a sieve, Bayam. And that is Zoe Be'era Shel Miriam. Omar Rav, Mayan Amital Tiltar, Vizel Be'era Shel Miriam. So he's going to see a large stone inside the sea, and that stone is the Be'er Shel Miriam. And Rabbi Chiya describes what it looks like. It looks like a large sieve-like receptacle. So the Gemara holds that you can see this boulder from the height of Har HaKarmel. Now, Har HaKarmel overlooks the Mediterranean Sea. However, according to other Midrashim, the location of Be'er Shel Miriam is actually in in Yam Kineret. So we have to see exactly if we can reconcile these seeming contradictions. Now, we're talking about a Mayon, and we're talking about a movable Mayon, a portable well. And the question is the well itself tar? Which means that the well is not subject, is not susceptible to Kabbalah's Tumah, which means that you could be Tovel in the waters of this Mayon. So the Gemara wants to point out that this very large stone, the boulder, from which water flowed during the 40 years in the Midbar, although it was portable, and that would seem to disqualify it as a mikveh, and we'll explain why in just a minute, it's deemed as if it were a mayon, as if it flowed from the earth. Now, if it's portable, then it would have a shem kli, and any water inside a kli is called mayim she'uvim, and it is disqualified for tefillah. However, in this case of a portable mayon, it is considered as a mayon, and it's not a kli. So it's not like you have a receptacle with water in it, but rather you have water that's flowing from the earth itself, and therefore it has the status of a mikveh kosher. And this is the Be'era Shel Miriam. Now, this is a phenomenon of this type that went with the Jewish people during the wilderness, and it has the status of a mayon. You and I would have thought that it's not a mayon, because it's a kli, and a vessel is not kosher for tefillah. It's mayim she'uvim, kamash malon, that it still has the status